and welcome to CIA Files, true stories of U.S. intelligence. Oh, yeah.
High energy. That's me. I'm Topher M. Ford. Topher High Energy M. Ford. And with me is Brandon freaking Nuclear Fusion Givens. Brandon, they recently, I didn't read past the headline, but I think that they just, some scientists just made a nuclear fusion happen. That's a big deal.
Do you know? I've not read that yet. Ooh.
Ooh.
That'll be pretty neat if they have, but no, I've not read that yet.
Ooh, it's a nuclear world, and I don't know. I got nuclear on the brain because today we are talking about maybe nuclear stuff. We're not sure. It's speculation.
Yeah, you could. I think the listeners could turn it into a drinking game. Like maybe they have to take a shot every time I say nuclear instead of nuclear.
But you're not going to do that, right?
Well,
I guess we are from Arkansas. I've probably done it before. I actually, at this point, whenever I say, like, nuclear is one of the words that I stop and, you know, like, take a beat before I say it, just so I don't George W. it up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I kind of thought they were giving him too hard of a time on that. That's a little, like, come on.
I mean, I understand you saying that, but at the same time, he's the fucking president. And he sounds like an idiot. And that was how I felt about it at the time. I was like, oh my God, you are so dumb. I think now, you know, given a little hindsight, we can see that, you know, maybe at least some of that was an affectation by W to be, you know, sort of underestimated.
Yeah, that's a clever trick. Make your appear weak when you are actually strong. Make your enemies underestimate you. Yeah.
Anyway, I said that maybe nuclear this week because we are going to be discussing former President Trump's FBI troubles.
Kind of came no!
Out of the blue, caught
we can't
everybody
stop talking.
By surprise.
We like cannot stop talking about this man. What also fits in with Ukraine right now because there's a nuclear power plant that the Russians have a whole bunch of weapons at, and they're firing from it. And according to the Ukrainians, the Russians themselves are firing at the site. And it happens to be hitting things that are, you know, the shells that come in happen to be hitting things that aren't horribly detrimental. Like, it's not good. I mean, shooting at a...
Right, you don't want to be...
But they're almost... I mean, they're targeted enough to be like, well, this is being done on
like, purpose. All right, guys. Hey, that's a little... You're like, yeah. You're shooting a little close to the gas tank here, buddy.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, am I? Am I shooting close to the gas tank? You know. I don't know what kind of, those are some weird gun sounds that I made. Bong, bong. I guess that's what I assume Russian machine guns sound like. I don't know.
They might.
Bong, 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 bong. Anyway.
And then their tanks sound like a kablooey. And then turret flies into the air, and that's what we think the aliens we're seeing are those untracked objects. Like, whoa, this turret's a... All right, that was one job.
Do the Russian tanks have a ski in the their sound? Like, Bluski! Bluski!
I think ski is with Polish.
I took it too far anyway. I got greedy. I went back to the well too many times, joke-wise. Let's put that behind us. The jokes, anyway. It's nuclear is in the air.
What's really scary about that too is it's more dangerous if that's, you know, like Chernobyl was more devastating than like many nuclear bombs that would be used. It's just it wasn't located in like New York City or L.A. or inside of Kyiv,
right?
And so, you know,
and it wouldn't,
They're taking the chance of creating a very major disaster.
Right. Because the difference would be like if someone set off a nuclear bomb, then bam, it goes off, it destroys everything around it, and it kind of like leaves this place radiated, and there's going to be some fall off with it. But I mean, and
well, the radiation leaves after 2 to 10 years is kind of like the max on it, which is, you know, it's horrible, but Chernobyl,
it's like instead of setting the bomb off, it was just like nestled, is more like a campfire, like a nuclear campfire that just burned for a million days, or, you know, it was less than a million days, but a long time.
Yeah. Nah, I wish that we could get some kind of like neutral international force that could just go in there and say, okay, just fight around us. You could have like Kazakhs and I like my idea of like the Kazakhs and the Swiss or something, you know, or the Turks, you know. It's like, oh, the Turks are kind of in NATO, but, you know, they're playing nice with both groups. And then they're like, right, we'll just make sure this place stays safe.
Because it's in everyone's best interests on every side not to shoot this up.
Well, apparently someone thinks it's in their interest to shoot it up.
Yeah. There's always one. Yeah. Well, should we talk about Donald Trump a little more?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because, you know, Trump's been in legal hot water for quite a while now over a few different things. But this one is one that's kind of flown under the radar. You know, he's in the news for, you know, like he's being, there's the January 6th riots and there's the civil suit going on in New York. But then all of a sudden, one of the biggest things that could ever happen happens. The FBI raids the home of a former president. And it's not for any of those things. It's over his, he has a bunch of stuff that he shouldn't have.
I mean, we've all come home from work with a pen.
Yeah. With nuclear launch codes printed on them, like at the back. Oh. Or it's like a nudie pen. Once. And he liked it because there's also a naked woman on it. Anyway. Oh.
Trying to remember what movie that was in.
All right, well, I guess let's dive in. And I'll have to go back and listen to this intro later and see how much of it I can cut out. Okay, in mid-January 2022, this year, 15 boxes of presidential records were moved from Mar-a-Lago back to the National Archives. Officials involved in the matter said Trump had dragged his feet on the request for the documents from his time in the White House, but eventually gave in. So he left the White House, and this is what I keep reading over and over again. He didn't think that he was going to have to leave, and they didn't start packing until about 2 weeks before he had to be out. And everything was done slapdash. Everybody's just kind of like, you know, like scraping papers, documents, and everything off of tables into boxes, and then packing it up. Some people come and grab the boxes and they took them down to Florida.
Or back away from Florida.
Yeah. So, okay, maybe he grabbed some stuff he wasn't supposed to. And then, so the National Archives, you know, once a president's term is done, or maybe they do it, it's an ongoing thing, but president's term is done, they go through and catalog every document from that administration, because all of that stuff is supposed to be documented. It technically belongs to the people.
Yeah, well, it goes into the presidential library too. That's that whole right. Point.
Yeah, it's all of the primary source documents that are related to everything that happened. They have all of it. But yeah, and going through Trump's documents, they were like, we're missing a lot of stuff that we know should be here, including his hurricane map that he drew on with the Sharpie. Notes from calls with other dictators. His love letters to Kim Jong-un. All of that stuff was missing. So they contacted Trump's lawyers. Trump's lawyers, like I said, they dragged their feet. They were not like in a hurry to answer these requests. But they eventually did. They sent back 15 boxes of records that they had moved to Mar-a-Lago. Then in mid-February, classified information was found in the documents retrieved from Mar-a-Lago. This raised concerns about what other classified material he might still have. It also raised the possibility that Trump broke federal law by bringing classified material to his Florida home. Officials from the National Archive also noticed that there were a number of documents that should have been returned but were still missing. Around June, members of the DOJ and the FBI visited Mar-a-Lago to meet with Trump's lawyers about the possibility that Trump still had classified material there. And they also issued a subpoena for more documents. Trump's lawyers responded, saying that any and all classified documents that Trump may have had were returned in January. So that appears to not have been the case, because on Friday, August 5th, a judge issued a search warrant for Trump's Florida home, and the FBI exercised the warrant, and they searched the mansion. Trump's lawyers were apparently given about 45 minutes notice. It is worth noting here that the White House said, White House says it has no advance knowledge about the raid, and the current FBI director, Chris Wray, was appointed by Trump, who is not his fan now. So what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, it's like, I'm trying to just break down the timeline. So January, loses election. Mid-January, they're like, hey, give us some stuff.
This is a little detail that slipped by me at first also. The exchange with the National Archives took place this year. So that stuff has been at his home for 2 years.
I wonder why they didn't notice it gone for 2 years. But I guess, archives, it's a lot of paper, a lot of work.
Right. Probably I'm assuming it, you know, and those wheels turn slowly, I think.
And what kind of disorganization was going on that was happening through that whole time? Like, all right, well, so if you've got letters to Kim Jong-il or whatever, you said that was in the list of stuff sent back.
That's some of the stuff that they noticed that was missing. I don't know that they ever actually got it. Well, they may have gotten it in this, in the raid.
Yeah. So that's kind of like my thing, showing just the kind of, gross negligence of that administration with not taking care of these papers and how could you have that much stuff? I kind of get the guy working from Mar-a-Lago. He's got, the White House of Florida. Okay, fine. That's where he wants to work. I don't know. I don't feel all that great about the idea of top secret stuff there, but all right, if you've got like a protocol for that and, security. Okay.
We're going to talk about that later, because that plays into it. And that's security at the Winter White House.
That's like my thing is, okay, whatever was going on, obviously they were just completely incompetent at the highest levels. Well, so much so, you have to wonder if it was intentional.
Well, so here's some interesting things I read. A lot of the people who worked closely with Trump, both in his business practices and then, in his administration, said he has this habit of ripping up documents and then just tossing them wherever. And he's and this isn't like him ripping them to shreds compulsively. He just maybe rip it in half or rip it in quarters and then throw it on the desk. The FBI, I think it was the FBI, maybe the Department of Justice, said that they have pictures of like notes that he tore up and put in the toilet. You know, like that's his kind of thinking. And of course, if you remember, you know, when he first moved in, he gutted the staff, the White House staff, and was very slow to hire on new people. And I got the impression that through most, if not all, of his presidency, he ran with as few people as necessary. You know,
just saving money.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm. That's his. He loves firing people, and you know, but so that with all of that in mind, I don't. That all tracks to me, I guess I'd say.
And that there just weren't people around to do those jobs.
I mean, Trump has developed, you know, it sounds like from the, you know, all of the different articles I've read that Trump has just sort of accumulated this little hive of people who run around him and fix everything in front of him and behind him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're running right ahead of him to make sure everything is how he likes it. And there are people following him to pick up the detritus that he just tosses around, you know. And
except sometimes they forget to pay the bills to the cities from his campaigns and stuff. But
well, I'm sure he likes to see how far he can go without paying a bill. I kind of, and this is again, this is more speculation on my part, but I picture him as having this. It's like a competitive sort of thing for him that maybe it's fun not paying bills, you know, like let's see how long I can put off paying this bill. Maybe I don't have to pay it at all, you know?
And right.
Anyway, that's a whole other, that's a sidetrack thing. So yeah. So of course, immediately people started protesting. There were already people protesting on the road to Mar-a-Lago, like, you know, holding up signs and shouting at FBI agents as they were coming and going. The GOP and the right-wing media immediately began crying foul, Trump supporters protesting, and of course, you know, the trademark of the radical right these days is calls for violence against the FBI, other government organizations. The judge who issued the search warrant had all of his personal information put out on social media, his, you know, address, every phone number that people could find related to him, his family and his close friends doxed as well. They were making threats against his children, just to tell you, you know, what the Trump side looks like right now. On Thursday, this past Thursday, today is Monday, August 15th, by the way, just for reference. On Thursday, August 11th, Attorney General Merrick Garland said that he initiated the request for the search warrant. So he came out. Merrick Garland is notoriously quiet, you know, and he gets a lot of criticism for that. Or I think maybe he gets a lot of criticism and he doesn't step up to counter it.
So, yeah, because he's not a child. He's not a child that feels the need to.
And he
hit me. I'm going to hit back. Like, okay, yeah. I'm doing my job.
Yeah, Merrick Garland came out on Thursday and confirmed that he had initiated the request for the search warrant. And he said in his, you know, his press conference, is like, I've said from the beginning that, you know, this office, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but like, we're going to speak through our actions, not our words. And I was like, well, you sure just fuck followed through on that this time, because this came out of the blue. There was no talk about it or very little. And then all of a sudden the FBI is at Trump's home. That's a a ballsy move. That's definitely some talk small, big stick, carrying big stick stuff. Yeah. The same Thursday, 42-year-old Navy veteran and Trump supporter Ricky Schiff attacked the FBI office in Cincinnati, Ohio. He led FBI agents on a car chase, and he was eventually killed by law enforcement in a shootout. And the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI have issued a statement saying that the threat of more violence is extremely high at the moment. I mean, we knew that, but I guess it's good to have it on record.
Right. I mean, it's like you had the old Timothy McVeigh characters and such. But they're, you know, and I remember all those conspiracy theories and, oh, Bill Clinton and Janet Reno are trying to create the New World Order, and the guy that drove the tank in Waco was the same guy that shot, I can't remember the fellow in Montana or Idaho.
Ruby Ridge.
Yeah, it was he like made a short bill shotgun or something, and you know, went after him. But you know, all these like weird conspiracy theories, but they didn't have, there wasn't a major political leader encouraging that directly, at least. You had a little bit of the indirect thing, like, oh, you know, the whole Christian persecution complex. You definitely had that. There was that, right. I remember that guy didn't want to wear the blue beret or helmet. Or something that's like a UN helmet on a peacekeeping mission. He's like, I don't want to wear this. And he got in trouble for not following orders, and like Bob Dole and that crew were like, oh, you know, he's a good Christian boy. It doesn't like the New World Order, and to him, that's what this represents, and this is about freedom of religion. And I'm like, well, it's about wearing a blue helmet, but, you know, so that people know who's a threat and who's not a threat and such. But that's that. Maybe I'm remembering it with slightly rose-colored glasses, but I don't remember there being mainstream political leadership pushing that sort of conspiratorial thinking.
Oh yeah, he's right not to wear that helmet. Then if he wears that helmet, he becomes addicted to baby blood.
Right. Yeah. Don't you know the Satanists, when they drink the baby blood, they're required to wear a blue hat. Or something, and that's what the United Nations really is about. But there is,
yeah. So, there was a little bit of back and forth about unsealing the warrant, because normally warrants, you know, FBI warrants are sealed. Trump, you know, the Department of Justice was like, if your lawyers want to unseal it, they're welcome to. And Trump said, we're not going to do it, but you can do it. We don't, you know. So they unsealed it on August 12th, Friday, revealing that the FBI recovered 11 boxes of classified documents, including some marked as top secret. And the Washington Post reported that unnamed sources said that among the documents seized were documents related to nuclear weapons. Yeah, so this is the Washington Post said, this is from the article, quote, classified documents relating to nuclear weapons were among the items FBI agents sought in a search of former President Donald Trump's Florida residence on Monday, according to people familiar with the investigation. Experts in classified information said the unusual search underscores deep concern among government officials about the types of information they thought could be located at Trump's Mar-a-Lago club and potentially in danger of falling into the wrong hands. So, we're gonna talk about this. Security at Mar-a-Lago was not that big a deal, at least not to Trump. Here we have former DOJ official Mary McCord. It said, this is from a Yahoo News article, Trump's Mar-a-Lago security nightmare. former DOJ official Mary McCord said, quote, clearly they thought it was very serious to get these materials back into secured space. Even just retention of highly classified documents and improper storage, particularly given Mar-a-Lago, the foreign visitors there, and others who might have connections with foreign governments and foreign agents, creates a significant national security threat. She went on to say, what we saw was Trump being so lax in security that he was having a sensitive meeting regarding a potential war topic where non-U.S. government personnel could observe and photograph. Oh, that's actually by Mark Zaid, a lawyer who specializes in national security cases. Quote, it would have been easy for someone to also have had a device that heard and recorded what Trump was saying. Sean Spicer said later, downplaying it, quote, at that time, apparently there was a photo taken, which everyone jumped to nefarious conclusions about what may or may not be discussed. There was simply a discussion about press logistics, where to host the event, he said. There's a long history of security concerns at Mar-a-Lago. There was the Chinese woman who tried to sneak in with some malware on a thumb drive. Then after that, the chief of staff, John Kelly, tried to increase security at Mar-a-Lago. But Trump refused to cooperate because my guess is he didn't like being told what to do. Also, Trump has, you know, a history of like talking, like being a little loose-lipped when it comes to nuclear information.
Like, oh yeah, that kind of gets to me with like, well, what might the damage here be? Like, yeah, like gross, well, incompetence, and but okay, he brought home his homework, and it had some secret recipes in it. Or how likely is it there were really secret recipes, or a couple of whole?
Well, so if you remember when Bob Woodward posted his book, what was the name of that book? Rage. Bob Woodward's book, Rage. He talked about Trump talking about nuclear weapons. This is from thehill.com. They pulled this little bit of information out of the book and highlighted it. Trump told Woodward at one point, quote, I have built a weapons system that nobody's ever had in this country before. We have stuff that you haven't seen or heard about. Then he said, quote, we have stuff that Putin and Xi have never heard about before. There's nobody. What we have is incredible. Woodward's book says unnamed sources later confirmed a new weapons system, but would not provide any further details and were surprised that Trump had disclosed it, the Post reported. And then this is back in May of 2020. At a little press conference where Trump was unveiling the flag for his U.S. Space Force, not affiliated with my U.S. Space Force, bandcamp.com, U.S. Space Force, bandcamp.com. Anyway, look for new songs coming out there soon. Anyway, at this meeting, Trump said the U.S. was developing a, quote, super duper missile. We have no choice. We have to do it with the adversaries, and we have it out there. We have, I call it the super duper missile, and I heard the other night it's 17 times faster than what they have right now, the president said, sitting at the Resolute desk. I think it was another moment of people going like, what? Stop. Can we stop telling him things?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's been one of Russia's big things, is having super fast missiles. They used one a few weeks ago in Ukraine, or we're pretty sure that's what happened.
Was it a hypersonic missile?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, if that's true, then would that be the first time a hypersonic missile was used?
I don't know the answer to that question.
But yes, I do remember Putin, you know, like doing some big talk about his new super submarines and their hypersonic missiles. Those things are scary. Yeah.
Well, this one didn't have a nuclear warhead on it, but yeah, I think it, I can't remember what it destroyed. I think an air defense system. So yeah, so it was able to get past because it was so fast, or that's why they believe it. It got past is its speed, but you know, the could be wrong, or what I could be reading could be something that to distract.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's always hard to tell, but yeah. All right. Well, so in the wake of, you know, this entire thing on Truth Social, Trump has demanded that the material seized by the FBI be returned to him, claiming that it contains material protected by attorney-client privilege. So that takes some. I mean, at this point, you know, go for broke, and he's always taken the bull strategy anyway, but. You know, that's some chutzpah to go.
the evidence of my crime.
Give me that back.
Is protected by attorney-client privilege, you see. Well, I don't know. Was it Alex Jones when his lawyer tweeted, or not tweeted, emailed the other lawyers his stuff? Because, like, that was supposed to be his attorney-client privilege. Like, well, you just emailed it to me.
Hey, here's the. Or if you're talking about the text messages, when they gave him the complete log of Alex Jones' texts, and the prosecution, even before they got into it, like, did the official process for asking the other lawyers, are you sure you meant to give this to us? And they never heard back. They waited like 6 weeks or something. I don't know how long it was, but they waited. Like, they did everything like super duper to the T. And Trump's lawyers, oh my God, they're just the worst. They're bad.
Well, it sounds like they're doing they're being good lawyers in the sense of they're doing the law. I mean, come on, we don't, most of law at this point, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm kind of venting, but it just seems to be more about precedent, not precedent, but loopholes and statutes. It's like getting, you know, the lawyers that get people off of DUIs. They don't get people off of DUIs because they're innocent. They get them off on a technicality, you know, like, oh, well, you know, you didn't do this test first, or what? He didn't sign this before you did the blood test or something. Just
right, right.
You know, you didn't file this form in time. You didn't. So, you know, that's kind of what lawyers, you know, do. Or it seems like the better ones are the more successful ones.
Yeah,
they sign these little bitty, you know, things there where the law is unclear. Or it doesn't say something, and then that's what they'll poke at.
You know?
Which that's been their whole executive privilege thing, where they're saying, oh, well, this is protected by executive privilege because...
It's like, you ain't no executive no more, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even back in the day, they would claim it for just about anything and seemingly get away with it because there's not a lot written on that in the Constitution. So
right. That we're learning because of Trump that a lot of this was expected to be like handshake deals and like trusting people to adhere to some measure of decorum. And So I found this this section from a political piece, Politico. This is actually an opinion article, which I don't usually, I'm not a big fan of. But in this case, this was a good one. It was by Renato Mariotti for Politico. He says, quote, Trump's best defense would likely be that he didn't really know that classified material remained at Mar-a-Lago because he relied on his aides and lawyers who told him that they gave all the classified material back to the government. The problem for Trump is that doing so would likely waive attorney-client privilege between himself and the lawyers he is pointing the finger at, and it's unclear whether any of them would be willing to take the fall for him. So, and this was written, Renato Mariotti is a legal affairs columnist for Politico magazine. He is also a former federal prosecutor. And so that was one of the reasons I liked this article, because he used to prosecute cases like this. And so he had that, he has that legal insight. The link for that story will be on the website, by the way. Working a quick website plug, CIAfiles.net, so you can see links to these articles. So, in the wake of this entire situation on Truth Social, Trump also says that he declassified the documents in question while president. While Trump did have a habit of informally declaring some information declassified, as well as seemingly playing fast and loose with information security, he rarely followed the proper procedure a president has to go through to officially declassify information. It sounds like, you know, Trump, somebody told him that the president can declassify whatever he wants, and so he like stopped listening after he heard that and just started going, that's declassified, that's declassified. And somebody's actually like a process that has to be done. But he's not he's not used to like, what's that?
Like declassifying information really should go through a process, because there could be something one would think is innocuous, but if you declassify it, and so you know the other enemy or whoever is being spied on finds out, oh, they knew about this, and then they can look for the hole. They could look for where the spy is.
So,
he did that though. He was saying some stuff.
He did lots of things.
Israel was like, oh no, crap. We don't want to share things with him because they're gonna get our spies caught because he's telling stuff that only, you know, this person could have known. And
That was when Israel launched or gathered some intelligence and I believe was going to launch an attack against some ISIS people. And when Trump found out, he happened to be hanging out with some Russians and just told him, oh, hey, this is what we're doing. Check this out. Israel's about to attack some ISIS people. You're like, what? There are a lot of stories of him just, you know, whatever happens to happen, he just kind of starts talking about it with whoever's there. So,
I like to feel important too.
Yeah. officials say Trump may have violated the Espionage Act, which we remember from our WikiLeaks episode with Julian Assange.
Maybe they'll be in prison jail together. That'll be so cute. Guilty of the same thing. Oh, but Assange puts poop on the walls, apparently. So,
Trump is
want him as a roommate.
An odd couple situation. That would be, I bet that would be a funny, funny sitcom.
Oh, he has to be like Orange is the New Black.
You know what?
Trump and Assange.
As soon as we're done recording this, we'll get together and work up a pitch.
Yeah, Netflix, come on. You know you want this.
Yes. So another interesting thing that happened. So, you know, Trump's one of the crimes that are one of the laws that Trump was supposedly allegedly broke was the Espionage Act. And now Senator Rand Paul is calling to have the law repealed, which is an interesting. And he said, you know, like this was a law that was used by the government to silence dissent against World War One. It's never been used for actual state security. So we should get rid of it.
Perhaps he's not completely off base, but I think amend or reform may be a better way to look at it.
Right. And it would not, like, the thing that he's saying the government used it for is not how it's being used now. Because the Espionage Act has to do with having government documents that you're not supposed to have, at least in part. And yeah, it's interesting. I wonder about how Rand Paul feels about Julian Assange, because if they did, I mean, it's not going to happen, but if they did repeal the Espionage Act, then that would end Julian Assange's legal troubles with the United States anyway. Which, you know,
I don't know. I think you can still, I'm not positive of the legal precedent, but sometimes my understanding is you can still be charged, or like, if I, you know, like sold cocaine, I'm in jail for cocaine, and then they legalize it 1 year into my jail sentence, I still may have to stay in jail. And I think that may even carry over. Like, if I committed something that was illegal in the past, as long as statute of limitations hasn't passed, even if it's legal now, I believe I can still be prosecuted.
If so, that you haven't gone to trial?
I'm not sure because I'm not a lawyer, but... Well, I'm just saying, like, I don't know, so I wouldn't bet on it. So, anybody out there that does know, let's know.
Let us know. Yeah. So, yeah, there's some things, you know, like, to kind of wonder about the future going forward here. The number one thing that I'm thinking about is the increase in violence. Trump has a very energetic and enthusiastic base, and a very well-armed base. People who seem like, for a long time, they've been spoiling for a reason to use all those guns that they've been stockpiling, and all the ill-fitting body armor.
After the revolution comes, after a few weeks, they'll be slammed into it. You know, it's kind of like when you got your kid and you buy them something just a little bit, because they're going to grow into it.
Well, so I think it's the opposite around. Issue.
They get a little tight because they're going to lose weight. And,
they bought it knowing that they were going to lose weight. They just haven't lost the weight yet. They're very stressed.
That's why they're agitating for the rebellion. Otherwise, they're like, man, I spent all this money on this stuff and I got it too small, and I'm never going to lose this weight unless we actually have the rebellion.
But so this is what I wonder. Like, I wonder what it would look like if violence became more commonplace. Part of me wants to say that it would just be really ugly and pointless. By pointless, I mean, like, wouldn't actually accomplish anything, because so far what we see is a bunch of people who don't really have any training. They don't really know anything about what they're doing. They just get, you know, like, so angry that eventually they're like, fuck it, I'm going to go shoot up the FBI office in Ohio, you know.
The quote unquote lone wolf.
That's not ever gonna, you know, that's not gonna really accomplish anything other than getting people killed. I wonder about, what about, like, non-reactionary attempts? Like, are there people out there who are making plans, you know?
I'm sure there are. And the FBI is kind of after them, or trying to get after them. And that would be also why those with the plans have been infiltrating police and law enforcement and the military. Because, that's the long term. You know, if you want to, change a regime, I'm trying to articulate this. When there is a revolution, whether it succeeds, most of the time will have to do with which way the police go. And,
right.
So if you can infiltrate them, like the day-to-day law enforcement, then that'll be, you know, kind of where it'll swing. So I predict just more scattered, continued random violence, as we have seen. I mean, I would say we're in a light civil war right now. I think it's kind of like silly to say we're not, because you have
like almost like a civil Cold War.
Yeah, no, I think it's hot. It's just we have a very low intensity terrorist insurrection.
Yeah,
at this point. So, and they do tend to have similar ideologies. They have similar things they want, and they do violence for political ends. I mean, that's against civilian targets. I mean, that's the definition of terrorism. You know, like,
yeah, definitely.
Political violence for the purpose of creating regime, or one of the purposes, you know, political change. They usually want to destroy the regime entirely, and it's against civilians, designed to inspire fear. And that kind of seems to be where we're at now. And they're very rarely successful. They can be sometimes, very rarely. There's that whole, it was kind of controversial, I think the whole Star Trek episode where Data referenced the IRA as being an example of terrorism working, and it's like, arguably.
Included like a future event that didn't follow, that was fictitious, but yeah.
But what terrorists are usually very good at actually accomplishing is destabilizing and embarrassing the regime that they dislike. So they do weaken it. They you know, because when they are killing civilians and the government is powerless to stop it, the government will often do things like increase its control, which often itself will not really work. And then so people get even more angry at the government and see it as a threat. And, you know, if the violence continues, yeah, it's like, oh, man, I got to take my shoes off at the airport. And I still don't. Oh, man, they're listening in on the phone calls and it's still not.
What about when like these insurgents have politicians who, if not outwardly, but basically support them? You know, like your Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, and, you know, lots of politicians at that level, and then a ton of them like that at the lower levels of government.
Well, that's where, it can move to, which is like a guerrilla war or like, you know, full on separatist war. And so the move would be, with guerrilla war, you have people recognizing that they're guerrillas very often recognize that who they're fighting is legitimate, but they want a seat at the table, and they also, but they themselves are not fighting for a particular state. They could be, but they're not employed by the state necessarily as by a state as state actors. They may want to create a state, but. But they follow the rules of war, or generally, and there are gray areas. Like if you have, you know, if you're part of a separatist group and you're, you know, a guerrilla soldier, and it's like, well, I'm not going to kill civilians, but I will shoot at police officers. And it's like, well, is that terrorism or guerrilla war? And really just kind of might depend on the nature of the police. Well, are the police a wing of the military, or are the police really?
But it's the difference. It's different than like leaving a pipe bomb at a coffee shop.
Right. Yeah. And both of them in general want some kind of change of regime. You know, guerrillas or, you know, like revolutionaries might want to change, you know, the entire government and who's in control, or they may want to break away and form something different. So for this, I mean, that would be for it to move from just terrorism to like civil war. You would have to have these politicians claiming some kind of legitimate, like separate state, and then reactions to it, like Texas seceding or something. And then it's like, oh, well, what are the police going to do? What are the military going to do? Who's going to do what? And because you have big questions of legitimacy there. And the other one would be if the presidency is in doubt. And then, you know, you might have people fighting in the street over it because they're not willing to wait for the courts. But then it's like, well, the police, they got, you know, ride to people. This person won. I know this person won. Well, the police should, you know, go out and make people go inside, you know. And if the police decide that, one, they can't do it, then the state has failed. And at that point, yeah.
Or the police decide, you know, that certain people don't need to be, you know.
Or the police
if they
decide.
Choose a side. Yeah.
Yeah. If they, you know.
I started to talk, but there was nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what worries me about that is, you know, recent history has seems to have shown us in general what side the police might take. That it will not be the quote unquote legal side. But we'll see, I guess. Hopefully, yeah,
We should do an episode in the future on the Oath Keepers. That would be a good one to cue people up on police infiltration. And, you know, it sounds like a nice thing, but cultish things often do. You know, oath to protect the Constitution. It's like, oh, well, that right. Sounds good. You should. That's what you're doing anyway, right?
Well, and that's a big, I was thinking about that yesterday, that a lot of politicians and public figures talk this way, but it's especially prevalent right now among the far right, this constant callback to texts that were written by people who aren't around anymore to speak up and say what they meant, you know. So the Constitution, all the far right people keep saying that they're originalists,
the Constitution wasn't even written for original, like for that interpretation. It was written with common law in mind and court interpretation. So there's right. Something crap.
Yeah. And, you know, and then they do the same thing with the Bible. Rather than look at the Bible as like a collection of writings, you know, about God and Jesus. This is a topic that we'll talk about on Rise of Mammon eventually. But, you know, they take the Bible and go like, this is the literal truth, even though, it's been translated a bunch of different times. Anyway,
I actually think that's a good sidetrack. I could give an explanation where it does kind of sound like Protestantism and Catholicism. So like evangelical means like literally like from the book, from the words.
Right.
And when the Catholics were doing the Counter-Reformation, their big argument was like, not that the Bible is wrong or anything, but if you like you read Acts, the book of Acts, it was a big question about, okay, well, what do we do when we don't know the answer? And there was a big question like, do you get circumcised? Do you have to be circumcised to be a Christian? Do you have to become Jewish to become Christian? What about pork and kosher and all that? Do you have to follow all that? And so they called together, you know, all the church leaders and discussed it and then came up with, well, no, you don't have to. And so the Catholic Church's party line is, anytime there's a question we don't quite understand or an issue in doubt, then you call the people together and the Spirit of God should be there if you believe in God and have faith, and then it'll settle it out. And you just, it's all about faith anyway, so you're supposed to have faith that they're correct. But anyway, that's kind of how they've written, they even have canon law and tradition and all that. Now, I'm not taking either side on that. As far as like the faith goes and religion, whatever, you know, I mean, that's, people have their own individual beliefs about that. But the legal perspective is kind of the same. You've got people that are saying like, oh, well, how this thing was written back then is exactly what these guys wanted, and that's how it should be today. But that's not even the rules within the Constitution. The Constitution itself isn't saying everything has to be exactly like it was in 1783 or 86.
Right. I think it's a bad faith argument that they make because the people who wrote the Constitution aren't around to disagree with them. The people who wrote the Bible, you know, the text that became the Bible, they're not around to disagree with them. So,
that's cliche thinking. It's just thinking in cliches, too. It's not, I think they're thinking deep, but it's just a cliche. I believe in the original Constitution. The founding fathers wouldn't have.
You say, okay, what does the original Constitution say? And then you go, well, I think it says this. And you're like, see, you're already, applying your own opinions to it. So, yeah, there's no, unless you have freaking George Washington and Thomas Jefferson in the room with you to ask them their opinions on the decision.
And you have things like the Federalist Papers. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, but even that is, it's that, was it Socrates who denounced written language?
Because
he said you can't, it's frozen in time. You can't engage with the written word. It's static and it's dead. And at the time, that was the equivalent of an old man bitching about all these kids texting today. But
they're getting lazy. Pace, their minds will be lazy. They won't.
Yeah. But in this particular, in this example, the far right is proving his point, and I think it's just a really easy tactic to push, whatever you happen to think is right, which is probably a mix of what's best for you and what you were raised to believe when you were a child, and just like trying to enforce that on everyone else. And so you're like, I think this is right. And you're like, why? And you're like, because that's what the Bible said. That's what the Constitution said.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, your average person on the street, especially your average conservative on the street today, thinks that the Constitution basically says that you can just do whatever you want. I mean, maybe I'm biased in that opinion because I live in Florida and I feel out of place. I'm just going to say it because I'm surrounded by a lot of pickup trucks and I'm also surrounded by a severe lack of sleeves often.
I've got a good example of a case where I think the founding fathers might have meant one thing, but the legal interpretations went the other, because that's what the Supreme Court is about, is interpreting stuff, and that's the decision, and that's constitutional too. It comes down to civil rights and things like, do the rights, like the Bill of Rights, for example, the right to bear arms. It had been believed that those rules were saying only the federal government could violate those rights. The states could, so the states would have to have their own. And that seemed to be kind of the going logic for, the first part of the country, the beginning of the country. But then later on, you've got an issue with, you have issues with slavery and racism and different states having different rules about, if you're dark-skinned, then you're not a citizen and all that stuff. And I'm just kind of simplifying it there, but... the courts ended up saying, well, no, these civil rights, the constitutional rights of the, in the Constitution are federal law and above the other law. They don't just apply to the federal government and limit the federal government. It also limits, city governments. And of course, now that, that argument's used to say, hey, I'm in New York City and I want to have a gun and there's that element of it. And because, recently the courts have gone towards saying, the Second Amendment is like, yep, you want it, you can have it, whatever firearm, go for it. And then you got the same, you know, a lot of the same states that will say, yay, New Yorkers have to carry, you know, can get guns now, even if the city doesn't really like it, and carry them around in the subway hidden. Hooray. It's that same legal precedent that says you can't not sell your cake to a homosexual because you don't like them or you don't like homosexuality. It's like, no, you know, civil rights, equal rights. And so, I mean, I see a lot of the whole, I like the Constitution. The Constitution means what I want it to mean when I agree with it. And then when I don't agree with it, that's not what they had in mind. And it's like, well, the Constitution was also written with three branches of government. Things change.
Right. And originally written just for landowning white men. So maybe things have changed enough that we could start to like de-emphasize it. Or I don't know what that process would look like. I know a lot of leftist friends might talk, you know, say that the Constitution was written by slave owners and it should just be tossed out. And like, well, maybe we could do better, but, you know, we got to have something there.
Yeah. Well, it's our second Constitution. We had the Articles of Confederation.
Right. But it's a whole process to update it, you know, or if you wanted to start over from scratch, just assuming everybody was on board with that and everybody went, yeah, let's scrap the Constitution and start over, you know, which is not going to happen. But you got to have some, you know, like agreed upon laws the whole time, I guess is what I'm saying.
Law is really just what we all choose to believe and whatever the police will enforce.
Okay, never mind. That's, you know, just a basic rundown of Trump's FBI problems. And it's really interesting. It's not boring, at least.
I could probably... Every 3 weeks on the news. Girl! What's happening now?
All right. Well, that's it for this week. And we'll be back next week with, you know, whatever happens to be on our noggins at the time. In the meantime, you can check us out on the internets. What do we got? Facebook.com/CIA files. Instagram.com. We're at CIA files. Twitter at CIA Files Podcast. And of course, I mentioned our beautiful website, CIAfiles.net. So you can go to the website to see the show notes, see the links for the news stories. You can also check out, there's a link to our merch, or if you want to buy a t-shirt, coffee mug, and a link to some support places like Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon, if you would like to contribute to what we're doing here to help us out. We won't argue with you.
Give us some reviews. Give us some reviews. We read them.
Yes. Reviews, please. You know what? Next week, maybe we'll pick out some of the reviews we do have and we'll read them out loud and have a conversation about some of them. So leave us some. Maybe we'll read them. Because that would also help us greatly with producing content. Anyways, you know, like I say, keep your bellies full, keep your head on a swivel, and stay cool. Something.
Bye.